Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars today kicking off. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. David Garrard. Tony, I'm guessing was in attendance at the East Carolina game last night.
I'm thinking he might have been.
That's what my feeling is. He didn't tell me that. He said he was going to be out of town. I'm guessing he went to the East Carolina game last night. I hope he stayed till the end.
I know. When I was flipping through channels trying to remember what channel the Peter Pan Live was on, I was like, oh, there's...
What? Wait a minute.
There's the... I'm just kidding.
Thank you.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you didn't see the, like, they shoved it down your throat on Sunday Night Football.
I saw the previews.
That NBC was going to be showing it. I forgot it was on. My roommate came home. He was like, oh, thank God you're watching football. I was like, why?
Why would you be watching that?
He was like, I thought maybe you were checking out that Peter Pan thing. I was like, oh, that was tonight? I had no idea.
I mean, I saw the promo 1,000 times because, like you said, they shoved it down your throat. But I didn't ever once notice, like, what date that was going to be on or anything like that.
It'd be interesting to watch Christopher Walken as Captain Hook. If anyone checked it out and during commercial breaks, let me know.
Let Tony know on Twitter.
I'm sure he was funny.
Don't call.
Because he's a funny guy.
How Peter Pan was. He is a funny guy.
But that's how I remembered even that East Carolina was playing Central Florida.
I had no idea East Carolina was playing Central Florida because I'm not in tune to Thursday night college football when the NFL is playing it was last night. But Blake Bortles UCF squad knocked off David Garrard's East Carolina squad.
Boom!
Last minute Hail Mary. Much smack to be talked, I'm
Jaguars
sure.
Jaguars quarterback skirmish.
At a future date, those guys will square off with that. Dallas going up big on Chicago last night, making it look pretty easy. DeMarco Murray, monster performance for him. Tony Romo bouncing back, getting a little bit healthier now in Chicago. Pretty much all but done in the playoff picture. They were a long shot anyway. Brandon Marshall took a knee to the back last night from Barry Church. And they said he could have a lacerated spleen. He could have fractured ribs. He could have neither or both. Don't know yet. Not looking good for Brandon Marshall to play the final three games of the season. So adjust accordingly, all you fantasy owners out there. But, week 14 is underway. Jags and the Houston Texans coming up this Sunday, as we always do Friday, a keys to victory, day. If you want to call in today and, kind of make your predictions or your, you want to share your best recollections and memories, certainly the, Hail Mary game, for the Jaguars beating the Houston Texans, got to be one of your favorite ones from this series. As David Garrard hit Mike Thomas, I'll never forget, Tony, in the press box that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone says there's no cheering in the press box. If you follow a team around, you know, you want the team. Look, there are some journalists that just don't care. I'm a journalist. I don't care. If you're a reporter who covers the team every single day, day in, day out, in all my years, whether I've been working on the Jaguar broadcast like this year, it's only been 1 year doing that. I've always sat there in the press box on the road and not cheered, but you're hoping that the team you cover wins because they're going to be in a better mood. They're going to want to talk more. They're going to say more interesting things. Everybody's happier. The listeners are more excited. All these different things that go into it. But that day, I'll never forget sitting there. The Texans media was just scoffing at the Jaguars all throughout the game. Just kind of laughing like, we're just showing up to pick up our W here. And you never saw a more stunned set of stuffed shirts than you did when that ball fell into Mike Thomas's hands and he scores that touchdown to win the game. And they were just sitting there with jaws open. And I mean, I just took a few extra seconds to linger in the press box that day before heading down to the locker room. It was pretty glorious. So if you want to talk a little Jags-Texans rivalry, you're certainly welcome to do that at 641-1010. Every Friday we ask you for your keys to victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can weigh in facebook.com/Jaguars today. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Keep your tweets about Peter Pan Live exclusively to 1010XL Fat Tony. I really don't care if it was good or bad or anything. I couldn't avoid a headline or two as I was scanning the internet last night. But,
yeah.
Just about the show. So I don't know if it was good or bad. Otherwise, I wouldn't have even known it was on last night.
I'm sure Walken was
He's pretty much good in everything. If you like Christopher Walken, you pretty much like most of what he does.
Yeah.
That's just the way it goes, and that's all good. So keys to victory today, we'll get into those throughout the course of the program. If you want to weigh in, we'll hear from Blake Bortles. We'll hear from Gus Bradley a little bit later on in the show as well. Tony, final month of the season. We've talked about it all week with a lot of other people that have come in here. With these last four games, what's the most important thing? Is it winning football games for the Jacksonville Jaguars, or is it developing the young core of players, or do they, I'm sure they somewhat have to go hand in hand, right? You gain confidence by winning and having success, and when you do the things that lead to success and then you ultimately get paid off with victories, it kind of reinforces that you're going about things the right way. But if I were to ask you simply wins or player development, what is this last month going to be about for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
For me, it's about developing these players. And I do think that it goes hand in hand, but if I could have one or the other, I would rather feel good about some of the young pieces on this team going into the offseason. Now, I know for a bunch of fans, and we talked about this a lot on Monday with John Osier when he was in with us, that for a lot of the casual fans, winning is what makes them feel good,
right,
about the young pieces on the team. And I totally get that from a fan perspective. I think that there are things you can see happening, whether a team is winning or losing, that you can point to as this is potentially good for this team in the future. I think that you feel better about everything when they win, which is kind of what we've gone through this week. The offense was not good in that game on Sunday against the New York Giants, but there hasn't been a lot of complaining about it because they found a way to win the game.
Right.
Especially, they found a way to win it the way they did, with the ball in their hands. Late in the game, Bortles went down and led a game-winning drive for this football team against the New York Giants. What you want to see is them build off that success, especially on a week like this. You know, you don't want to see 3-3 and outs to start the game like you did last week. You want to see them use some of that momentum from late in the game last week, carry that into the game against Houston this week, and continue to get the ball in the hands of some of these young playmakers, guys like Denard Robinson. See if he really is going to be a guy that you're relying on going into the next couple years. And please, please, please get the ball to Marquise Lee in some space, and let's watch what that young man can do, because he is electric with that ball in his hands, running right by the defender for the touchdown last week. And you could see on that slant, he was another half step from maybe getting into the open field and having just the safety to put a move on between him and Pater. So, look, I think that you want to see the development still of this offense. The defense has answered a lot of questions since the first month of the season, but let's watch the offense develop over the last 4 weeks.
Tom McManus just texted me. Double Nichols sent me a text and just said, "Just win, baby!" Exclamation point. See, and I think that's the situation when you've got veteran players. Veteran players aren't sitting there thinking about, "Hey, let's develop for next offseason." There's so much turnover in the NFL. They want to win right now. They have a limited amount of time. They have a limited amount of career that right. They're on the football field. This is a somewhat different circumstance with this particular football team because it is so young, and you can envision so much, or you hope at least, that so much of these, so many of these first and second year players are going to comprise the core of your team going forward. But I think that maybe if you ask different people, the answer would be different things.
Sure.
I think every player would tell you win, whether they would tell you that in your heart of hearts, because I think players just play and they want to win on that particular day. But if you could step aside, and if you're one of these young guys and look and say, "Look, what we need is we need to hit the ground running next year, and we need to get as many guys as experienced as we can." It's tough to put yourself in that mode when you're a player. A guy like Red Bryant, what would Red Bryant be thinking about anything but winning for?
No,
right?
You're right. And look, when we go back to last year at this time of year, we were talking about a team that halfway through the season last year, it was the worst NFL team maybe that's ever been put on the field. The way that they were playing through the first 8 games, they won 4 of 5 there in a stretch, and everyone felt really good about this team going into the offseason, about this offseason momentum. And look, they carried the momentum of what happened at the end of the season into the offseason. And there was an energy in the fan base because of it. There was this belief that when they come out in 2014, it's going to be different than it was in 2013. And the results at the beginning of the season weren't there. And there was a lot of frustration from the fan base. You can build up that same kind of thing, where if you win, you know, 3 games down the stretch here, you're going to have momentum in the fan base I don't know how much I buy into that carrying into next season. I think that it helps them from a PR perspective if they win a couple games coming down the stretch here to say, yes, we were very young, but you can see the results. And by the way, it's one of the last things that a young team will learn how to do is win. It's just to put everything together and find a way to win games on Sundays against teams that are more experienced than you, that are probably more talented than you at spots, to find a way to win those games, to put the pieces together, that's a really, really important step, especially for your young quarterback. So, yeah, you want to see him win, you know, another couple games coming down the stretch here, because I think that instills belief in a guy like Blake that you put him in situations and he knows he can get it done.
I would agree with that, that there is something to be said for going through that process and being asked to deliver in the clutch and coming through in that circumstance, like the Jags did 3.5 minutes to go and needing a score to take the lead from the New York Giants and the defense finishing the thing off against
right.
Eli Manning and company. But I think the other thing it does is it does skew perception in a positive way to such a ridiculous degree because, Tony, if you asked anyone midway through the second quarter last week, what do you think the Jags' chances will be against the Houston Texans next week? They would have said incredibly small based on the way the Jags' offense has been playing. Now, the Jags' offense really didn't dramatically do that much in the second half. They had the touchdown drive with Marquise Lee. They had the field goal put them up for good to win the game. And, of course,
they got sacked.
Right. And they had a field goal drive in the first half. And that's what they had offensively for that football team. But you win the game, and all of a sudden, I'm feeling pretty good about their chances mm-hmm. this week against the Houston Texans. You know, and maybe it is just a case of you just kind of whitewash the mistakes that come along with the performance when you get the ultimate W on the board. You can't count on your defense scoring any given week. Certainly can't count on it scoring twice like it did last week. So the offense is still going to be an issue, and we'll talk about that as we go along today. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. A lot of different things you can chew on today. What's more important to you over the last four games of this season? As a Jaguar fan, they're all shapes and sizes of Jaguar fans. I tend to think the more hardcore fans are the people that listen to this program on a day-in, day-out basis. And for those fans, I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but I would think that more of that group would lean towards player development in the big picture because they feel like they're invested for the long term. A lot of casual fans, I think, would feel that winning is all it's about. On that given, I just want them to win on that Sunday when I'm sitting there for 3 hours, I'm tailgating for a couple of hours,
sure.
I'm spending all this money for tickets and parking and concessions, and I want to have a great time, but I want to have a great time because my team is winning, not just because of the party atmosphere that comes with it. So you can weigh in on that today as well if you'd like to. 641-1010. What are you hoping for and looking for? What's most important to you over the final four games of this Jacksonville Jaguars season? What are the chances against the Houston Texans? What are the keys to victory? That's the official Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight question of the day. Again, tweet me at MD_1010XL. Tweet Tony about all that that live Peter Pan news that you've got at 1010XL Fat Tony. By the way, I tweeted out last night the new binge-worthy program that I've been into is Intruders on BBC America. I've gotten, I wouldn't say hooked, but I found a couple of good series on BBC America in the last few weeks. I'm a binge watcher. I know you are as well.
Mm-hmm.
You find a good drama series, and when you can stack three or four episodes back to back for a couple of days in a row, that's a great way to do it.
Definitely.
Intruders. It's actually, I didn't realize this. I was describing it to some people, has a little bit of an X-Files feel. The producer of the X-Files did this series.
Oh, okay.
As well. So that made a little bit of a sense, but it's a good one on BBC America, just a little bit out there. But if you're an X-Files fan, I think you would like that program as well. All right, phone calls, certainly welcome to take yours throughout the course of the day. Also, today's a big anniversary in the sports gaming industry. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later on, the Honda drive around the NFL. And as I said, we'll hear from Jaguar coach Gus Bradley and quarterback Blake Bortles throughout the course of the show today. Agent Gibbs is along with us. What's up, Agent Gibbs? How are you today?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're fantastic. You're pinch hitting for Lauren Brooks, getting ready for your double dip. I guess you're the on-site producer for both the pregame and the pregame show. Is that right?
That is correct. Ready for a fun Friday.
What else you got going on this weekend, man? Are you after XL Primetime? Are you free and clear? What's the story?
Yeah, free and clear. You know what? It'd be the first Friday in a long time. No Bishop Kenny football anymore. They dropped out of the playoffs last week after a good season, very good season going to the playoffs, but fell out last week as a lot of teams around the First Coast did. So it'll be a free Friday. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, Tony put up, what did you put up, 36 against me with DeMarco Murray last night in one of the listener leagues?
Yes.
Did you get off to a start in your listener league playoff game last night, Agent Gibbs?
You know what? I haven't even checked. I had Dez Bryant and Alshon Jeffrey. I don't know.
Oh, you did well then. Alshon had 20-something points, and Dez was like 15. Didn't kill you.
14, 15.
You'd like to have 20-plus out of one of your stud receivers. That's a decent start for Agent Gibbs. All right, if you want to get in today, 641-1010. What are you, as a Jaguar fan, looking for most out of these final four games? Is it wins? Is it player development? Is it a combination of the two? And what are your keys to victory for the Jags in this specific contest with the Houston Texans coming up this Sunday at Everbank Field? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you Jaguars today every Friday, along with Agent Gibbs. We're right here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, the music theme today is whatever Andrew wants to play, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that usually how we do it when Lauren Brooks is out?
Yeah, we might go off the wall a little bit. We'll see.
Oh, really? I'm interested to see what you consider to be off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up today, Andrew Gibson. Lauren Brooks is on assignment. In fact, she's on assignment, I think, in Charleston today. Taking in the city of Charleston as a tourist over the weekend. Good for her.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What?
It was just funny listening to her yesterday. I get a chance to go to Charleston for a day, so I'm taking advantage of it. I wanted to go as an adult because I went as a kid and enjoyed it, and I haven't ever been as an adult.
Is that funny?
It was funny to me. I don't know why.
All right. I mean, it's there are different things.
No, I hope she's having a good time.
Adult.
Oh, I know.
In Charleston, I suppose. Then I don't know what much there is to do. What, Fort Sumter? That's there, right?
I know people go up to Charleston. Again, you can tweet us. What do you do in Charleston,
do you do in Charleston
when you go visit?
I don't know. I know they have like that row of houses that's like brightly colored. You know, every other one is a different, like really bold, bright color.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I remember from Charleston. We went to Charleston. My first time, it was the first time I ever met my now in-laws. I had probably a good foot-long ponytail working in the day.
Nice.
And my father-in-law at the time was a captain in the Navy, based in Charleston, lived on the base, and
I'm sure he loved that.
He was, you know, my in-laws are the best, man. I am so lucky. I was, you know, some little wannabe hippie dude rolling into the Navy base. This is like, you know, Gulf War time, right? I mean, the first Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm, I guess, was going on. I don't know if it was Desert Shield or Storm at that point, but whatever it was ongoing. So, you know, it was heightened security on the military base in Charleston as we came in, and they couldn't have been the nicer people to me, always right from day one. My in-laws are the best, man. I know a lot of people have, like, horrible in-law stories, and people think I just say this for effect. They're awesome. I am the luckiest.
Good.
I won the in-law lottery in a big, big way. But that was my entire experience in Charleston, was basically spent on the Navy base there. So I didn't really see a whole lot driving around the city there.
No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't if you weren't driving around.
Right.
Exactly. All right. Tony, so far, as to be expected, every key to the game involves four letters, WATT. Do we overemphasize how big of an impact J.J. Watt has for the Houston Texans? Clearly he's an impact player, and you see at times he does change the course of games because he starts to make some plays, and you have to commit more people to blocking him, which opens other things up. But he is one guy. He was on that team last year that went 2-14.
Sure.
Right? And he was a good player last year, playing better this year. But it's not J.J. Watt alone that has made them a more dangerous team. So do we put too much emphasis on J.J. Watt?
I'm not sure that you... Look, a guy that can do what J.J. Watt can do, I'm not sure that you can put too much emphasis on the effect that they can potentially have in a football game, because I do think J.J.'s at that position has got himself in the MVP conversation. which is a very rare thing for a player that's playing defensive end, especially defensive end, in a 3-4, to be being talked about as a potential MVP in the National Football League. But that's the kind of level he's playing at this year. So I don't think you can overemphasize it. I think that because you're looking so much at J.J. Watt, people are not looking at anything else that is going to happen in this game. And I think, look, we talked about it. There is a guy in DeAndre Hopkins that's really coming into his own here in the last month or so of this season. He is a dangerous weapon for this Houston team. You have Fitzpatrick, who's coming off maybe the best game of his career, coming into Jacksonville this weekend.
I don't think there's any maybe about it. I mean,
he's been a guy that's been so up and down that maybe there's an expectation that this week is going to be the down week for Fitzpatrick, and he's going to throw two or three to the good guys this weekend. But I think there are other things on this team. Arian Foster is still a really talented football player. He's second or third in the league in rushing.
Right, I think he's one of the top five running backs when he's healthy in the National Football League to this day.
And he'll be here. You know, I mean, it's not just J.J. Watt that's coming to town. J.J. Watt is a lot of the reason that the Texans, after going 2-14, are back in the conversation for a playoff spot, but he's not the only reason. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney, the number one overall pick in the draft, has given them nothing.
Right.
He's played four games. He's played in four games. He's going on IR again after seeing the second opinion from Dr. Andrews.
I doubt he's made, I mean, it certainly to my recollection, didn't make a single play that you would remember.
No.
This year.
And look, you have the turnaround on this team really has been about the pieces they had coming together and that they're getting something out of the quarterback position as opposed to being hurt by it, which is what they were getting last year from Schaub and Yates and Keenum. They were being hurt by that position on their roster, and they're not being hurt this year. Fitzpatrick is helping them more so than hurting them, and Mallett helped them in the short time that he was on the field, too. This was a really talented football team 2 years ago. There's still a lot of talent in Houston, and this year they're putting it together a little bit.
I think Fitzpatrick has been neutral at best for them as on a whole this year. You know, when you say he's helping them more than hurting them, let's realize he did get benched. He got benched on a team that still, I mean, it was early enough that they still had playoff aspirations and they felt like they needed a spark. Now, Bill O'Brien had seen Ryan Mallett as much as anybody, having been the quarterback's coach in New England, where Mallett backed up Tom Brady for his entire career. So he probably had a little bit better idea of what to expect. And probably the organization wanted to get a chance to see that guy out on the field. The only reason Ryan Fitzpatrick's playing again is because Ryan Mallett got hurt and he's done for the year now. So, you know, when Ryan Mallett comes out and throws six touchdown passes, it's not like Ben Roethlisberger when he did it in back-to-back weeks. When Ben does it the first time, you're like, well, there's no way he's going to do that again. And then when he does, you say, well, you know what? Ben's a pretty damn good quarterback. He's been like a top six, top eight quarterback most of his career in the National Football League among active guys. And he got an incredible hot streak, and he got in the zone. When Ryan Fitzpatrick does it, you think, well, the stars all align for one day. And you're likely never to see anything approaching that again out of him. So we'll see as they go up. Because the Jags have been impressive, I think, with their pass defense. You know, Andrew Luck got harassed, but it's not just the sacks and the fumbles that you caused. He held the guy to around 250 yards passing, and in this season, the way he's throwing the football,
right,
it's pretty damn good. One touchdown pass in that game for Andrew Luck, and he's been one of the hottest quarterbacks right from the first week of the season, and I think he did a pretty good job on Eli this week as well. Rashad Jennings, I think, had the surprising success against the Jags in the first half, but ultimately, if they can harass Fitzpatrick the way they've harassed the last two quarterbacks, I think they have an outstanding chance to win this game.
No, I do too. The NFL is a big play league, which is why guys like J.J. Watt have such a significant impact. You saw it last week, Jackson. It's why you won the game. It's because guys on your front four made plays, and those plays change the complexion of games. And the other things that can do that are these big chunk plays. It's why when you're watching the game last week, why when I was watching it, and again, maybe it's the 20 years of watching Giants football and having a sense, especially the 10 years that Eli's been up there, when that team isn't making big plays in the passing game, they're ready to be taken. I mean, it's when, and they weren't making any of those. Those things weren't coming. They weren't getting chunk yards in the passing game against this Jacksonville defense, and the Colts didn't either with the exception of one play. It was when teams are able to get those chunk yardage plays, that's when you're in trouble defensively, which is why Arian Foster and Hopkins are still scary guys when you're coming into a game. They've been really good at shutting down other teams' offenses for the last month or so, and we'll see if that continues for this football team. But I think there are some things in that Houston offense that you have to be really, really careful about. It's not just J.J. Watt that is a scary potential playmaker for this Houston team.
As good as DeAndre Hopkins is, and the game he had last week was ridiculous. It could have been even bigger. They missed a couple of opportunities. Went over 200 yards, scored two touchdowns, could have easily had four and a lot more yardage, approaching 300 yards. Sure. But I think Arian Foster is still the key.
I do too.
Because I think he opens things up.
The other thing is Andre's always had a meal against Shaq. I mean, he always has. In his career in Houston, he's found a way to have big games against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I know he's kind of the second option in the passing game right now for Houston, but that doesn't mean that he's not potentially still a playmaker.
He certainly is, but I think the reason we talk about Hopkins is because exactly what you're talking about, the chunk plays, the guy who's likely to hit you with the quick touchdown over the top has become DeAndre Hopkins. And before, that was always Andre Johnson. He was the guy that whatever you asked of in the receiving corps, the answer was Andre Johnson. That's not quite the case anymore. If you need a tough catch on third and six, Andre Johnson's probably still your guy. He's not slow, Tony. He's just not what he used to be. He used to be incredibly fast for a 230-pound receiver who's built like a Mack truck, and it made him fairly unique among the players in the National Football League today. But when you look at this depth chart, we sit here and say for the Jags, well, let's hope that Marquise Lee can continue his steady improvement. Had a nice game last week. It wasn't, you know, anything mind-blowing by NFL standards. And so we're looking for a little bit of an improvement. And then what? Then who? Can Cecil Shorts give you something? Can Allen Hurns give you something? There in Houston, what you're talking about is you got an emerging young playmaker. The guy we hope Marquise Lee is next year is who DeAndre Hopkins is right now, and he's not done improving. And then you go to the number two guy, and that number two guy is a Hall of Famer. And he's still got some game left. He's not a shell of himself. He's not what he used to be, but he's not a guy that you look and you just go, wow, you shake your head like this guy can't do it anymore. He can, just not as frequently maybe as he has in the past.
And when you look at his career numbers, he's played 19 games against Jacksonville. This is Andre Johnson. 19 games against Jacksonville. He's got 119 catches for over 1,600 yards and 7 touchdowns. I mean, that's right around, what, 86
yards
a game?
And he's never been a big touchdown guy. So that's right in line with his career numbers as far as the TDs go, which is honestly a little surprising considering his size.
Right.
But as we talked about this week, you pointed out, when you got a guy like Arian Foster in recent years, who's been so prolific at getting the ball in the end zone from inside the 10-yard line, you lose some of those red zone chances when you're a receiver. But
sure,
1,600 yards in 19 games is phenomenal over the course of a career. So, yeah, he's been a killer of the Jacksonville Jaguars, like he's been a killer of just about everybody that he's come up against.
No doubt.
In his career. All right, 641-1010. If you want to get in today, weigh in with your keys to victory on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Friday's brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. And we're glad to have those guys on board with us. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Agent Gibbs here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
He just gets it. The guys gravitate towards him. He's a natural leader. He wants to be in situations like he was in on Sunday, and he just loves that part of it. Yeah, he's a guy that you love to be around.
Jaguar coach Gus Bradley talking about the developing maturity of one Blake Bortles, echoing a lot of the things that we've heard all throughout really the process since the Jags drafted Blake Bortles with the third overall selection in the 2014 NFL Draft. Gus Bradley on the Gus Bradley Show last night with Jeff Logman here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I did notice, Tony, just having Blake in this week. We had him in after the Cleveland game.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different demeanor in terms of he felt like he contributed to this win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was funny him walking in after that Cleveland game. He's like, I don't know why anyone wants to talk to me.
Right, why do you want to talk to me? Was the first thing out of his mouth. And I get that. You know, he's like, look, I didn't do anything. But I think it's part of him realizing as well that look, they're always going to want to talk to you. Okay, everyone's going to want to talk to you. You're the quarterback of the football team. The quarterback is always in demand, regardless, good, bad, indifferent. And that was in probably an example of him getting more recognition than he should have simply because of the position he plays. Whatever the case. Look, sure. It was his first win as an NFL quarterback. There's plenty of reasons you want to talk to the guy. We're not saying, at the time, we recognize it wasn't Blake Bortles who put the team on his back and carried him to a victory over the Cleveland Browns, but just having played a positive role in this one and making the plays that he had to make in the fourth quarter in the last drive of the game to put him in position for Josh Scobie to kick the game-winning field goal.
Yeah.
I think just for him, I'm going to ask him this because we're going to interview him later for the pregame show for Sunday. Has he had that kind of aha moment, now I've proven myself or I've arrived or I've done, or do you have to carry that in as a quarterback to some degree? I think you have to have that belief in yourself even before you've done it. You have to believe you can do it, right? But there's got, no matter how much bravado, false or otherwise, anybody has, there's got to be something to actually accomplishing it for the first time that puts you in a different kind of mindset.
No, there does. And I know we may replay the interview we did earlier this week here on Jaguars Today with Blake on Tuesday, a little bit later on in this program. But it was interesting listening to Blake talk about his experience through this first 12 games and the idea being him actually saying, guys aren't open the way I'm used to guys being open. This idea of everything is so fast and the windows are so small and you have to, this idea that people talk about of throwing guys open, you really do have to be committed to that. And I think that's the reason you see a lot of rookies struggle. It's the reason that you saw a guy like Blake throw as many interceptions as he did, because these windows that he thought might be there because they're so small anyway weren't really there. So he was throwing to see if the window was going to be there, and he lets the ball go, and he goes, nope, that door is shut, and knows that the ball is going to be coming back towards him on those kind of plays. And you've seen in the last couple weeks, and maybe it's because they are, especially this past week, rolling him out, giving a bit of an easier read. There's two guys, three guys in this route. You should be able to see who's going to be open on this side of the field or run. And when they gave him those kind of plays, he was really effective running that kind of offense.
Remember when he got drafted and we looked up, he had gone on the sports science show, that little thing. They did it. They had that little gauntlet that they run the quarterbacks through.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say at the time, in the area of throwing on the run, in terms of hitting, they ask you to kind of roll out and throw to different levels and hit a target or throw it into a basket or whatever it is that they're having you do, that he was, if not the most accurate, one of the most accurate guys that they've tested since they started doing it. And then you found out, I think the other guy who had matched him was E.J. Manuel. So it was like, it was good and bad, because you'd rather be, look, just because you're accurate doesn't mean you're going to turn out to be like E.J. Manuel, obviously.
Right.
You'd choose the accuracy. It also shows you that the test is not the end-all, be-all of anything, but it always kind of stuck in my head that was one of those things. And we saw that this week, getting him outside the pocket, moving with his feet a little bit, and feeling comfortable doing it. And I think, you get in that situation. I think the challenge for him as the season has gone on is to make sure he throws with the proper mechanics in those situations.
Right.
Early in the season, I think that's one of the things that stood out to us, Tony, but it came off of a summer and training camp when you had all this extra time to drill on the fundamentals. But the thing you noticed about his body positioning is that when he did roll left, he would get those shoulders squared to the line of scrimmage. So he wasn't throwing across his body. He was in proper throwing position, and he had the athleticism to be able to throw on the run. And I think as the years go by, that's going to be a big tool in his arsenal that's going to be really effective for him.
And I think for a guy like Blake, he's been hit a lot. And I think when you're getting sacked as many times as Blake is, you can't help but try to speed up that clock in your own head as far as when do I need to get the ball out. And even on those rollouts, it's, all right, there may be pressure that I'm not seeing coming from somewhere that I'm just not aware of right now. So he's not taking the time to get his feet set because maybe he doesn't want to take a big shot. I don't think that he's afraid of the contact. I think that he wants to make a play. and his desire to make a play means the ball has to get out of my hands however I need to get it out of my hands. And because of that, I think some of the fundamentals have kind of waned a little bit here in the last couple of weeks. Drives like that on Sunday, again, against the Giants, maybe tell them that you can relax. If you trust what you're seeing, trust your ability, you can make things happen on an NFL football field. He is capable of making things happen for this offense if he just goes back to what he was doing when he first came in.
Marquise Lee, the beneficiary of that touchdown pass from Blake Bortles this week. Quick thought from Gus Bradley last night on the progress that Marquise has made.
His arrow's pointing up now. He has a lot of momentum on his side, has a lot of confidence. He's practicing that way. So he's on a good little roll right now. We just got to keep that going.
Other than Blake, offensively, is he the most important guy in terms of development? I think he is.
Yes.
I mean, I think Jokel's important as well, too, now. Keeping in mind that this guy's only played a season, as you heard Jed Fish describe it earlier this week, he's coming to the end of his rookie year in terms of being a left tackle. He's played 16 games in the NFL and 12 of those, 12 full games as a left tackle in the National Football League. But Marquise Lee was drafted high in the second round for a reason. This team has craved two things, well, other than quarterback. It's craved two things longer than anything else, and that's pass rush and wide receiver play. Since Jimmy Smith left, and I couldn't tell you since whoever left in terms of the pass rush. They don't have the one dominant pass rusher, but the pass rush has been a big part of the story this year. And I'm not saying Marquise Lee is going to be a dominant wide receiver, but he has got to be a productive starter for this football team if this plan of Dave Caldwell is going to come into place and everything's going to fall together, because you need that guy starting next year, day one, starting lineup. He's out there in every formation and he's got it down cold. He's not going through that learning curve anymore. He's got to be free to go out there and just play the way he played that made him the Biletnikoff Award winner and one of the most dangerous receivers in college football.
Sure, and he's a guy, look, you can see the athleticism when the ball is in his hands. And he is a scary type of athlete, and the Jags haven't had that. They haven't had guys in the passing game where when the ball gets to him, you're like, okay, let's see what happens
right
from here. And I think Marquise Lee has that kind of ability. And the other thing he has is an attitude where he knows it. You know, he knows that he has that kind of ability. I don't think the stage is too big for him. I think that he was trying to figure out where he needed to be so that he would have an opportunity to make plays. And it's starting to come to him a little bit easier on a week-to-week basis, and you're seeing it. He gets that ball in his hand, that head gets upfield, you're like, all right, let's see what's going to happen with this guy. That kind of, they describe it now as quick twitch. These guys that can...
It's been described that way for decades.
The athletic ability to just make guys miss, and Marquise Lee has that kind of thing in him, and I think you saw a little bit of it here in the last couple of weeks. You want to see him get more and more comfortable in this offense, because the idea of having him and Robinson and Hearns going into their second years in the league next year after having this year to build up their confidence and not feel like we have to learn where we need to be, they know where they need to be, it's an exciting prospect for Jaguars fans, because all three of those guys have made plays at different times this year.
I think all receivers have a degree of what people usually refer to as like swagger, right? But
not like Marquise.
But what I'm saying is a lot of them internalize it.
Yeah.
You can't play that position in the NFL as really, in football, there's probably some truth to be said that you can't play football at this level without having it. But
you know what Marquise is, Mike? Marquise is that guy that if he ever figures out a way to be that 60 or 70 catch guy a year, he is going to annoy the crap out of every other team that they play. The other fan bases are going to hate Marquise Lee. I mean, he is that type of guy because of the attitude he plays
right,
the game with.
He's going to walk the walk, and he's going to signal first down, and
yep,
he's going to chirp at you. And
when's
he's
the last time you
things
had that, Jacksonville?
Right. I mean, well, and that's what I was going to say. He is the outward swagger. He's the guy, but he's got to have the success to pay that off.
Yep.
You know, to justify that. Gus Bradley last night, a couple quick thoughts about the comeback nature of the victory against the New York Giants last week.
Here we are down 21-0, 21-3 going in at halftime. To see the look in the eyes of the guys, it wasn't bad. It was just like, okay, we got to regroup and we got to go out there and do it. It's going to take everybody, all three units. And just that kind of talk that took place, you know, just what a credit to the players on this team.
And we'll see if that, in fact, as we've been suggesting it will all week, be kind of a springboard for them. That doesn't mean they're going to immediately turn around and win three of the next four games, but can it improve their level of play? Can it improve their belief in what they're capable of doing? And, hey, here's an idea. Can we not wait until there are 3.5 minutes left in the game to go on a critical drive? You know, we don't know it's a critical drive. How about first and 10 at the 20-yard line 4 minutes into the contest after you've just forced a Houston punt? How about that?
How about a 14-17-point lead? Those are allowed.
That'd be a nice idea. Now, let's see the pass rush then.
Right.
With a 14-point lead, and you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick having to drop back, say, early third quarter, and let's see what Chris Clemens and company can dial up at that point in time. Gus Bradley also weighing in last night on the Gus Bradley Show on just the general appreciation that they have had for the fan support, despite the fact that they're 2-10 right now.
We said that when we get excited, you get excited, and we hurt, you hurt. And they truly are going on this journey with us. We appreciate it. The players felt it now. They said the environment, how loud it was, and when we needed them, they were there. You can't give enough credit to our fans.
Well, the organization's done a good job giving you the surrounding things that you want for the game day experience. Fortunately, in the second half this week, the team gave you the same thing. And you're right, Tony. They go out there. They're ready for it to happen. They're ready for something good to happen. Yep. So the ones who did hang in for four quarters were definitely paid off this past week on that. And finally, Gus Bradley last night weighing in as well on the aspect of players motivating one another in the Jaguar locker room.
I think there's one thing when a coach says, okay, let's go get this W, or when the players are saying it. That's what took place that last drive. The players were talking that way. Hey, let's go execute. Let's go get this thing done right.
You want that to be Blake Bortles. That really right. is his job on offense. You want him, or among his many jobs on offense. He's got to be the guy that can look everybody in the eye in the huddle and be like, okay, here we go, and in turn have them believe it. Right, and believe that about him coming through and having success in those situations is going to help build that belief. It's been pretty impressive to listen throughout the season to, you know, every time Mercedes Lewis in particular. I think he's the biggest proponent in this regard of Blake Bortles, but all the receivers, any of the offensive linemen, you ask anybody on the offense, really even anybody on the defense, and they recognize the it factor that's there. So they do believe, despite the fact that they haven't gotten results, they believe the results are going to come. But it's nice to see those results get paid off. The other side of it, to have a veteran like Red Bryant, because Red Bryant, I think, has become that stand up and deliver the speech, for lack of a better term, to get the team fired up, whether it's pregame or halftime. And to have a guy who's got the resume of winning a Super Bowl, that, you know, tough guy on the field, veteran player who's got the ultimate respect in the locker room, to be that vocal guy, because it's tough, I think, for a rookie quarterback to be that guy as well. He's got to earn it with his play first. Before he starts giving the rah-rah speech to a 2-10 team, I think it's a lot easier to have a couple of guys from a Super Bowl champ coming in and one of those guys taking the mantle there.
No, I totally agree with you, and I think that Roy Miller's kind of been that guy too for this team for the last couple of weeks at least. That defensive line, that whole group, they got a lot of swagger on that side of the ball, and like you said, it'll be nice to see what would happen with those guys if they get the opportunity to get a 14-17 point lead. And there's a lot of belief, and I think that's the source of a lot of the frustration with a lot of the guys on offense when you talk to them. They know. They feel like it's in the locker room. They feel like what they need to be successful on game days is in the locker room, that their quarterback is good enough to be successful, and that they keep getting in their own way week after week after week after week. And it's, well, what do you have to do to turn this thing around? I don't know. It's right here. You can sense the frustration from those guys, especially, you know, a guy like Cecil who's been around for a couple years and has been here when it's been really bad, that you can almost sense that he knows there's enough there that they should be playing better than they currently are, and that eventually everyone's going to figure this thing out, and it could be really good here in Jacksonville.
I think that goes into what you talk about, learning how to win for a young football team. You've got all the pieces. Are they good enough? Okay, they're good enough, but you're not good enough until you play that way. You know what? They're potentially good enough. Everybody believes they've got the pieces necessary. Part of being good enough is actually doing it
no
as
doubt.
Well. We'll see if they can get their second consecutive this week.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, a lot happened on this date in football history. It did, December 5th, and it's brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville, Tony. You can go way, way back. The first football uniform numerals were used on this date in 1908 as with the University of Pittsburgh adorning their uniforms with numbers. Baseball, I know the Yankees were the first team to wear them. Didn't wear them until the 20s. So I don't know why it took so long for that to catch on in sports, but I guess it did.
It's probably around the time that broadcasting began.
It might be, right? Right? Easier to call those guys out, to single those guys out, no question about it. Also, the state in football history, going back, let's take a look in 1974, the NFL's Seattle Seahawks were granted a franchise on this date, and they formed, and they would join the Buccaneers as expansion teams in the mid-1970s. On this date in football, December 5th, 1982, the Dallas Cowboys beat Washington 24-10 at RFK Stadium for Dallas's and Tom Landry's, their only coach in their history at that time, 200th regular season victory. I know that makes you all warm and fuzzy inside. Big Dallas supporter that you are.
Oh, yeah.
And then, Tony, on this date in 1983, the video arcade game NFL Football was unveiled in Chicago. It was the first video arcade game to be licensed by the National Football League.
Catchy name.
NFL Football. Why not, right? I mean, I was looking back at some examples going through history. I just kind of Googled history of football video games. Mm-hmm. And, oh, that first Atari was 3-on-3, first of all. You played 3-on-3. And I want to say Intellivision bumped it up to like 5-on-5 or 6-on-6, which was a major leap forward. But the great thing about Intellivision was the players had arms and legs, which was nice. Instead of this basically being a square block
blip
that moved around the screen. I have one of those. They rebooted them, but they're the exact same game engine. Those little Mattel handheld football, the green one.
Yeah.
You know, with the little lines, and you just try have like the three rows, and you try to get your dot through the line.
Yeah.
It was addictive as hell.
Yeah, what was that? I can't, what was that called?
What was it? Well, there was one, Coleco had one as well.
Yeah.
I didn't
have it, but it was at the barber shop that I went to as a kid.
What, the handheld one?
Yeah, like it was one of the things they had just in the barber shop for the kids to play with while they were waiting to get their hair cut. So I remember that as a kid. I would play it there. At home, I had the Atari. I didn't have a football game on the Atari. I had baseball on my Atari.
Oh, they had a big campaign in television against Atari baseball because you actually had a diamond on Intellivision. You basically had a, I don't know what you had. You didn't have much going for you on Atari back in the day.
No, you really didn't. And honestly, the first football game that I remember playing or having, and until very recently, it was the last time that my parents ever bought me a video game, was when they bought me Tecmo Bowl, and it was the year after they got me an NES. And the next Christmas, I got Tecmo Bowl. I still have my copy of Tecmo Bowl. About once a month, I still go back and play through a season, basically as the New York Giants, and try to go win the Tecmo Bowl one more time, because being the Giants on that game was essentially like cheating. They have a play that is indefensible for the computer, so you can always get away with a play. And I was talking about this with you when you mentioned the fact that the first video arcade game for football had come out, that my favorite video game player of all time is to this day Lawrence Taylor on Tecmo Bowl. He was as fast as anybody else in the game, and it was back in the day, for those that have played it, when you chose a player before the snap, that's who you were for that play. You didn't get to hit the A button.
Right,
and
you couldn't switch. You couldn't
switch
around.
Like, if you wound up with a defensive lineman that went at 1 mile an hour on the screen, that's what you chased the whole play with, was that defensive lineman. And Lawrence Taylor was as fast as anybody on the game, with the exception of probably Bo Jackson. And, yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't you use him? Just line him up where you want and just run down plays from all over the place.
Oh, it was awesome.
I'm looking at old pictures of the electronic handheld Mattel game here, and Classic Football 2 seems to be the most commonly used name for it.
I think that was what I played.
Yeah, it's, you know, the green. It had some different cosmetic changes, but it was basically a green thing with directional arrows, and you just moved your thing. You can move up, down, left, or right, and you tried to matriculate your way through those little dots that were the defense. And crazy. I mean, how simple.
Yeah.
How little went into that, and they probably made who knows how many untold millions off that. I had one of the baseball games like that that had the little flip-up end. That was a big revolutionary thing. They had a little flip-up end, and they had like five different pitches that you could select so your opponent couldn't see if you're going to throw a curveball
right.
or a fastball or a changeup or whatever the case may be. But in 1983, I never played NFL football in the arcade. The first one I ever played in the arcade was 10-yard fight. It was a frustrating damn game. Let me tell you what. I don't know if I ever gained 10 yards on 10-yard fight.
10-yard fight.
You ever see it? You ever see 10-yard fight?
No.
Oh, my goodness. It was like you had to move like the whole offense. It's hard to describe. In sequence together, like all the players, you had to, if you wanted to block, like you had six guys and you would move the block of guys and they would all move together. And you'd have to get one of them lined up on the defender and knock him off. And then you move the whole pack of it. Was I'm still searching for my first down and 10-yard fight. So there you have it. This date in football history, 1983, NFL football debuted in the arcade in Chicago. And look where we've come now with basically virtual reality. It's not quite there yet. But it's close.
It's really close.
The simulations, as far as non-virtual reality, not having to put on a headset and immerse yourself in some kind of parallel universe, Madden is ridiculous, the level of sophistication that it's gotten up to. Best Fence Company of Jacksonville brings you this date in football history. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product for you at a competitive price and provide you unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Dallas Cowboys, although it wound up much closer than it may appear at a glance, thanks to a Bears onside kick recovery midway through the fourth quarter last night, cruised to a 41-28 victory, thanks in large part to the more than capable all-purpose back DeMarco Murray, who after last night could be closing in on some pretty significant running back history. After last night's 179-yard performance, Murray has 1,606 yards on the season. He needs 394 yards in his final three games, or around 131 yards per game, to become the eighth back in NFL history to hit the 2,000-yard mark in a season. Eric Dickerson holds the all-time mark at 2,105. He ran for that in 1984. Murray would need to average 166 yards a week to get to that mark. In case you were wondering, Murray is averaging right around 123 yards per game to this point this season.
So he needs 166 to get to Dickerson's mark or to get to 2,000?
To get to Dickerson's mark.
And he needs
131.
131.
So he needs to be a little bit better than he's averaged this year to get to 2,000.
Well, they only gave him 41 touches last night.
Yeah.
I mean, 41 touches.
Constant.
So it's becoming, and I'm not the only one who suggested this, but it's becoming more and more apparent, or at least likely, they're going to run him into the ground and let him walk and not re-sign him. He's a free agent after this year.
Appeals.
And there's been plenty of speculation that Jerry Jones is smitten with Adrian Peterson or the prospect of having him play for the Cowboys. Now, that was pre all this stuff going on with the child abuse and all that. But Jerry Jones goes and trades for a fresh-legged Adrian Peterson in the offseason. DeMarco Murray walks away. Wouldn't be surprised one bit.
Not at all. We mentioned earlier this week that the Houston Texans' number one overall draft pick, Jadeveon Clowney, would be seeing Dr. James Andrews for a second opinion about his balky knee. Andrews apparently told Clowney he would need a second surgery to repair that knee, and with that, Clowney will be placed on the Texans' injured reserve, ending a season. He finishes his rookie year with four games played, including two starts. He had five tackles and two assists in his time on the field. And finally, in a note from this morning on NFL Network, Demaryius Thomas, the soon-to-be free agent wide receiver, went on with NFL AM this morning. He was asked if he would be willing to take a hometown discount to stay in Denver. His quote, "Of course, why not? Peyton is one of the best in the game, and I've been blessed to have him as my quarterback. I learned so much from him. Denver, of course, I got to take my hats off to them because they took a chance of drafting me in the first round. So I'm sure the Broncos organization really loves to hear that.
His agent says, shut up.
Right. What are you saying?
All right. I mean, even if it's true, shut up. and, you know, as a Jag fan, the reason you should be interested in this is that the hope is, I think, that with both Thomases, Demaryius and Julius, up for free agency this offseason, wide receiver and tight end respectively, that the Broncos couldn't afford both and that you'd at least be able to bid on one of those guys, whether they chose to come here and play or not.
Right.
But the more likely thought would be maybe Julius Thomas, because I think more people feel that they need the upgrade. Heck, I'd take them both, Tony. I'd take either one. I'd happily take. In fact, I'd rather have Demaryius Thomas because I think he's the more dynamic talent than Julius Thomas is. But in terms of greater likelihood, I don't know if they're willing to spend the kind of money that Julius Thomas might command on the open market. But if they can work something out with Demaryius, they can franchise Julius for a year if they decide to while they're still in that Peyton Manning window, which would shrivel up that Thomas pass catcher market for potential Dave Caldwell dollars to be thrown at. So there you have it. All right, the Honda Drive around the NFL. Coming up, we'll hear from Blake Bortles, who sat down with us earlier this week. Jaguar quarterback authored his first come-from-behind victory in the National Football League. Fourth quarter come-from-behind victory over the New York Giants this week, and with the game-winning drive to set up Josh Scobie's field goal. That's coming your way, 641-1010. If you'd like to weigh in, you're certainly welcome to do that as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Agent Gibbs here with you. It is Jaguars today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We continue on. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you the show every Friday since 1905. Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida with the largest selection of new or pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees and the only Cadillac dealer in North Florida to sell and service the ELR. Claude Nolan Cadillac is an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any Cadillac model and guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for our Friday sponsor on Jaguars today. That is Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jags and the Houston Texans coming up. Blake Bortles coming off his first game-winning drive in the National Football League. Albeit, hey, we'll take field goal drive. That's all you need. That's good enough to get the W, and he joined us in studio when Jeff Logman was in with us earlier this week on Jaguars Today, and he did it on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat. All right, we continue on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Let's welcome in the quarterback of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles. Blake, how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, congrats on the win, and congrats, you know, in the fashion that it came. Defense got you guys back rolling in the second half. Offense, though, needed to do their part. You got the touchdown drive to Marquise Lee. Put us in your shoes. Tell us what's going through your mind as you know you need a field goal at minimum to take the lead and win the ball game. What's going through your mind as you break the huddle?
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, it was an exciting experience. You know, kind of the second opportunity, really, we've had in this situation, you know, first being Tennessee. You know, so obviously you want to give your team an opportunity. You want to give them a chance down by two to be able to get in field goal range and have a chance. So we did that. You know, we overcame a couple penalties. You know, we had a couple big plays, and at the end we were able to give Josh an opportunity to win the game for us. So, you know, it was good. It's something we practice all the time, two-minute drill, and we were able to execute it.
What's it like in a huddle with so many young guys? I mean, here you are in a huddle. You got Bowanko and Linder and Marquise Lee, Alan Hearns, you know, D. Rob. I mean, yeah. Joke. I mean, everybody's young.
Yeah, it's not much different than it was last year in college. Everybody's the same age. You know, everybody's 22, 23 years old. And then there's Zane, who's 26, 27.
The old man.
Yeah, besides that, everybody's 22, 23. So, I mean, it's awesome. It's cool to kind of go down this road and on this journey with a bunch of guys that are going through the same thing, going through the same learning experiences, and we're growing together and learning and getting better as a group. And, you know, it's definitely special.
Yeah, everybody talks about, Blake, as a quarterback, you're so overwhelmed. There's so much information to process, particularly if you're going to be playing as a rookie. Have things started to slow down for you, or is this whole first season gonna, you're gonna look back and it's kind of a blur?
Yeah, it really has. And I think, you know, I was telling somebody earlier, it's all about repetitions and going to do it. I think you can learn a lot by sitting there and watching, you know, like some guys have, but I think you learn more and you learn quicker when you get the opportunity to go out there and do it. You have to make, you know, certain throws. You have to do certain things to be able to know, you know, I can or cannot do that, you know. And, you know, I think each week and each opportunity is a huge learning experience. And as long as you take something from it, you know, it's a positive.
What's been the greatest challenge? Because, you know, when you come out of the collegiate level, you know, an offensive playbook is pretty simple. And then you come to the NFL level, it's very different. But it's the speed of the game, it's the athleticism on defense, it's the critical moments that seem to get just, I mean, absolutely inflated, more so at the NFL level. What's been the greatest challenge for you?
You know, like everything you said, you know, has been a big challenge. You know, the speed of the game, the amount of time and preparation put into each week. You know, there's no going to class anymore. You know, you're in here 12, 13, 14 hours a day, getting ready for whoever. And you know, if you love football and this is what you love to do, you can't beat that. You know, I think, you know, so that was something that was different, you know, the time commitment. Obviously, you know, I think something that I struggled with was, nobody's really open anymore, you know, throwing the ball down the field. Everybody's so fast and so athletic that you got to throw the ball to guys that are covered and find a way to get them the ball. So, I mean, when you have guys open like, Clay Harbor was the other day, you know, you can't one hop them. So, I mean, I think that was something that was challenging.
You overcame it. You made up for it. You made up for it in part thanks to the play of Marquise Lee. Second week in a row, he's shown a spark for this offense. You feel like he's starting to maybe get past the hump a little bit here, and things are starting to slow down for him as well a little bit?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. You can tell. You can see it. You know, he's not so wide-eyed anymore. He's kind of, you know, I think understanding, and, you know, he's out there every week, and he knows what he's doing. You know, he's really worked hard and you know, coming to learning, you know, this offense. And, you know, he goes out there every week, and, you know, as you can see, if you get the ball in his hands, he can do some special stuff with it.
I remember at about this time of year in my rookie season, I'm just going, man, I'm getting ready for a bowl game, you know, or you know, we're getting ready, you know. Now you have what, conference title games? I was seeing the Florida State playing Georgia Tech for the ACC championship game.
Yeah, Virginia would not have had to worry about that.
How's your mind holding up? Because I mean, you know, Thanksgiving usually, you know, you eat good, and then after that, you know, one game more, and then it's time to kind of chill for a little bit for the bowl game.
Yeah, that's right. So it's different, you know, because now you have 4 more weeks. But I mean, I think, you know, everybody talks about the rookie year being the longest one. You know, there was no off season. You were from college to training for the combine, to training for pro day, to coming here. So I mean, I think it, you know, everything that you've done, in your preparation and all that stuff with your body is kind of where that is showing now. And, you know, hopefully holding up as strong as possible and, you know, feel good. You know, feel excited and, you know, anxious for these next couple opportunities that we have left.
We were just talking a few minutes ago, about your play, and you obviously have excellent coaches. I mean, Jed Fish has been around the game for a long time, and I call him like the mad scientist a little bit because he's an incredibly smart guy. Frank Selfo has been coaching quarterbacks for a long time, and we were talking about how during the season, it's very difficult to actually have a quarterback learn footwork mechanics and everything else because you're so overwhelmed with learning the playbook and the game plan. Do you look forward to the off season to where you can work on some of these things that are mechanics things?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's kind of like a first year thing, you know, I think, because I think, next year, you know, being in the offense for a year, have a better understanding of it, won't be as much pressure and as much time spent on that. So, you know, I could be able to do some physical stuff. But I mean, this year it's extremely difficult to try and work on things because there are things that need work. And, you know, it's kind of hard to do when, you know, you got to focus on, you know, the offensive playbook and still trying to get a full grasp of that. And then you got to focus on the defense that you're playing that week. So it's extremely hard. And Jed and Frank are, you know, they're guys that have been around quarterbacks for a long time and they understand that. And, they're really good about it and understand how to handle it.
What went on in the locker room this Sunday? I mean, was there an impassioned speech? Did Gus rally the troops? What exactly sparked you guys to come out and have the second half that you had?
Yeah, it was pretty special. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of yelling and screaming. It was kind of Gus saying, you know, this is your opportunity to go out and write, you know, the ending to this story. And, you know, people are going to say what happened in the locker room and what went on in the locker room to make those guys go out there and play in the second half the way they did. And it was, you know, that was Gus's word for word. And, you know, it was nothing special. It was us going out there and competing and, you know, the team really doing what they've done all year. And, you know, it's fight till the last minute.
Yeah, Jeff, as you pointed out, not many teams in that position with that record this late in the season are going to have that kind of resolve down by that kind of margin. So there obviously there's something going on with the chemistry of the coaching staff and the players that you guys have in the locker room that has that belief still going despite what anything else is going on around you.
Yeah, it's a special group of guys. You know, I've told multiple people kind of outside of the Jacksonville area that I talk to that I've never seen anything like it or been around anything like it, where a group of men in the situation that we're in and everything going on still have the same fight and passion every day at work and still go out and treat every Sunday like an opportunity to get better and, you know, take full advantage of it. It's special to be a part of.
Got a couple questions for you. One, I mean, you've been starting now for, what, eight, 9 weeks? What defense has been the most challenging for you to understand? Because each week is a new challenge. But which defense did you say, boy, at the end of the game you went, man, that was hard to figure out?
Yeah. You know, there's a couple. And it's probably not the best thing to say, but it is. You kind of, you know, me and Jed had a thing the other day, and it was kind of you talk about it's a blank slate right now, and every defense is a new defense to me, to where in a couple years you can say, okay, this is so-and-so from Dick LeBeau's
tree. Get a little recall.
Yeah, exactly. There's really 5, 6, 7 trees of defensive coordinators and defenses in the NFL. So you start kind of, you know, compartmentalizing them like that. But, I mean, I think there was a couple. You know, obviously Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, you know, do so much stuff and throw so many things at you. You know, with double mugs and disguising and Polamalu's running around and you got no idea where he's going. So, I mean, I'd say those two were probably the most difficult to understand in the game.
Did you ever expect that playing quarterback at the NFL level and being a starting quarterback would demand so much? Because, I mean, it's not only, you know, the quarterback of a franchise, but, you know, the media, you know, the everything else that's required of the quarterback position in the NFL, and has there you ever had a moment where you went, I just need to close the door and put on some headphones and just and meditate for a minute?
Right. Yeah. You know, I don't know. There's times where I just want to play football. I know that. I don't want to have to do a whole lot. I just want to be able to go play ball. But I mean, I think it kind of, you know, I don't know if I ever thought about it. You know, kind of always dreamed of just playing football in the NFL. Never thought about what you had to do outside of the lines. But it is part of it. And I'll tell you, I've really learned and come to have a huge respect for guys in the National Football League that play quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember sitting on the couch in college and kind of critiquing guys and saying stuff, and, you know, that's not happening anymore.
Well, on that note, one piece of advice, look out for number 99 this week, all right? He's having a pretty good year. And go enjoy the rest of your day off. And this is his day off, and this is an example of what you're talking about. Right. He's in the building. You're in here pretty much every Tuesday doing something, right?
Yeah, I'll be here for a while.
All right, there he goes. Blake Bortles, congrats on the win, the comeback, and all that, and go get another one this week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, man, there he goes. Blake Bortles of your Jacksonville Jaguars, thank you very much for stopping by. All right, there you go. Indeed, Blake Bortles. And, you know, I loved Tony just hearing what he said, kind of paraphrasing, you know, you're in the building for 14 hours. You're just immersed in football. It's not like you're in college. You don't have to worry. This is your job. This is everything. It's football, football, football. And, again, to paraphrase, you know, for a guy who loves the game, he said, as much as he does, it's the perfect job. It's heaven. It's ideal.
Right.
And that's what you want. You want your quarterback to not be able to get enough of being around the facility, being around his teammates, being around the film room, studying, preparing, all those things. Hey, there's time to enjoy your life as well. I'm sure Peyton Manning enjoys his life, but, you know, those guys who get to that level of play, put in the work behind the scenes.
No doubt.
Many more times over than you actually see for those 3 hours on Sunday afternoon. So, thanks again to Blake Bortles for stopping by in the Garber Auto Mall hot seat. Coming up, we've got the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships, asking you, as we do every Friday, for your keys to victory. What do the Jags need to do against the Houston Texans this week to pick up win number three and their second consecutive win here at Everbank. Again, last minute tweets at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. And that's how you get on board. It's a Friday edition of Jaguars Today, brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the home stretch here, Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. What do you got going on till Sunday? Nothing, huh?
No,
nothing
I mean,
work-related anyway.
No, I'm off with no more Friday Night Lights. I'm done until Sunday morning when I'm back here to do Jaguars pregame.
That'll be very exciting as the Jags go for win number three on the season, two in a row, and I think there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm that they can get it. You know, I don't think it'll be one of these games that people show up thinking there's no chance. Now, certainly the offense is going to need to play better on Sunday. We'll get to keys to the game here momentarily and see how that all works out. But I saw a little blurb on RotoWorld that said, I saw Justin Blackman's picture, and it linked to John Osier's mailbag that he posted this morning. Said he thinks Blackman has a good chance to play. In fact, he got a question, John Osier did, senior writer for Jaguars.com, from Jim in Jacksonville. He said, John, you've said you think there's a good chance Blackman will play for the Jags next year. Only a month or so ago, you seemed much less hopeful. What has changed? And the reply from Osher was, actually, I felt there's a good chance that Justin Blackman will play for the Jags next season for a little more than 2 months. Since early October, reports have indicated that Blackman's in involuntary rehab and is doing well. As long as that remains the case, the doing well part, because he's out of rehab now, I believe there's a good chance Blackman will play for the Jags next season. I don't know the details on how that will play out, as details are typically scarce when it comes to a suspended player until the process begins to play out. But details aside, that's what's changed. You and I talked about this many times in the last couple of months. At this point in time, I would expect, if Justin Blackman doesn't have any further missteps with his personal life, that he will play for the Jags again. Although the thing none of us can know is when the NFL would reinstate him, when he applies for reinstatement. Will he, based on his arrest for marijuana possession this past summer that he pled no contest to?
Right.
Is there further discipline involved somehow coming down the line? I don't think we know at this point in time. So, but again, if he stays on the straight and narrow, so to speak, at a point in time, there will come a point in time when he eventually is cleared to play. At that point in time, I think we'll see Justin Blackman back in a Jaguar uniform.
Yeah, a couple things. Look, a year and a half seems like enough. Even if he did have another arrest while he was away, a year and a half away from the game seems like enough of a punishment if I were the NFL, but they haven't always seen eye to eye with me.
Seems like it to me too, but then again, they got the whole CBA to deal with and all that. I mean, it seems like, particularly in light of, Ray Rice gets suspended for two games, then they try to suspend him for the whole, or indefinitely the whole year, whatever, and then that gets overruled, basically, and so, but you do have the CBA to deal with.
And you don't know when he's going to be reinstated. If it's going to be during this offseason or if it's going to be later than that, we don't know what the timetable is realistically for Justin Blackman. Secondly, let the game of telephone begin. The conversation we had with Osier earlier this week about people hear what they want to hear. This will eventually be that John Osier guaranteed that Justin Blackman will play for the Jaguars in 2015. That's, somebody is going to think that's what John Osier said, that he's the guy who said that Blackman will definitely be a part of this next year, and he hasn't gotten anywhere close to that. But that's how things work, especially with all this new media. I'm sure someone on Twitter already thinks that's exactly what John Osier
I just caught the last half of that. Did they say, yeah, I know that happens, and whatever, that's just the way.
And if he doesn't, then it'll be, well, you're the guy who said that Blackman was going to be back. No.
Right.
It's the guy who thought he probably would be back.
Yeah, it's all right. I've given up on worrying about if, people listen to what you actually say. They're going to roll with what they think you said anyway. It's been happening pretty much ever since you, you know, for me, it's as only since I've been on the radio.
Right. So,
and I think it's probably the case with everybody in this position. At least in Osher's case, he can go and point to the mailbag from today and say, here's exactly what I had to say. So check that out.
He does have that.
All right. The Tom Bush Family of Automobile Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, Tony, asked people today, as we do every Friday, to weigh in with their keys to victory to defeating the Houston Texans, and how J.J. Watt-centric are we today?
From Robbie, there's only one key to victory. Stop J.J. Watt, no matter what side of the ball he is on. Hashtag just renewed tickets. I do believe season tickets for 2015 went on sale today. So if you want to renew those, you can.
I got my email yesterday, as a matter of fact, on that.
From Brandon, number one, know where Watt is. Number two, stop Watt. Number three, shave Fitz's beard of power. From Eric, contain Watt as much as possible. No turnovers and more hookups from, he meant to say Blake, so I'll give him credit for it. Blake to Lee. I had to chastise
what,
Eric.
What did he say?
He accidentally put Blaine
he
in there.
He did not.
But he misspelled it. It's B-L-A-N-E, so it's one letter. There's no I.
The N is kind of catty corner from the K.
Yeah.
I'm looking down
here. I chastised him and he said, yeah, I should have just put Bortles. I feel like an idiot. So,
all right. Well,
there
well,
you go.
Let it slide.
From Nick, we got number one, get J.J. Watt blocked. Number two, get J.J. Watt blocked. Number three, don't let J.J. Watt score. Hashtag Watt MVP. From Irish Jag, we got number one, the pass game, pass out of Watt's reach. Number two, the run game, run around Watt. Number three, defense, cover Watt. Those are his three keys. And Christoph, his three keys today were, number one, everything Irish Jaguar said. Number two, stop Arian Foster. Number three, don't let DeAndre Hopkins or Andre Johnson beat us over the top.
All right. For you, clearly, J.J. Watt, you have to contend with this guy. You can't let him wreck the game, right? If he gets a sack, it's not the end of the world. Don't have that sack, fumble recovery where Houston's defense starts feeding off of that and you get in that position where he can pin his ears back. And that goes to the offense, Tony.
Yeah.
That's early points on the board, I think, is a key to this football game. When you've got a guy who's as ferocious a pass rusher and a disruptor as J.J. Watt is, don't make yourself predictable and one-dimensional in the second half of the game. Get out there and put some early points on the board. And as we talked about earlier, if you can play from a lead, what will that do for your own pass rush, which has been phenomenal considering the fact that they've rarely played with a lead this season, and it's typically when you're going to have that kind of success. So I think that's certainly there. Don't let them hit the big plays. Make them earn their points, right? Make them if Arian Foster's got to carry it 10 times on a 14-play drive, you don't like it, but you can live with that a lot easier than quick over-the-top to DeAndre Hopkins or Andre Johnson.
Well, we're in a weird place because I haven't felt like this about the Jaguars' defense maybe since 2007, basically, but I feel like they're going to get a handful of sacks and probably force a couple
I
turnovers in every game that they play. And the counter to that for most of the middle part of the season is it didn't matter if they were forcing two turnovers. The offense was giving up three. And last week, they forced the three turnovers. They committed none. So, again, the key for this team to me is just play a clean game. Play where you're not turning the ball over. Don't let the special teams hurt you. And see where you are at the end of these games because the defense has been good enough to keep you in. When you played a team like Pittsburgh, we talked about it all week long. You can't – look, there are going to be guys like Antonio Brown that if they catch six passes for 80 yards and even a touchdown, that's who they are. You know, you can't let that guy have the week where he's making the Pro Bowl on you, where
right.
He gets the 13 catches for 160 yards and the two or three touchdowns.
Hopkins got that last week.
Right. And that's kind of the thing with J.J. Watt. It's not that you're going to be able to take him out of a game. It's that you don't let him control the game. It's that you can't have the week where he is getting the 2.5 or 3 sacks and forcing the fumble and a couple turnovers that gets you killed. You can't let that guy beat you. He's going to have his moments. He's too good not to. But what you can't do is let those moments be enough to beat you. I think that's a big key for them. And like I said, I think that they will force a couple turnovers. Protect the ball. Let Blake run around a little bit. Keep using the offense where you're getting him out of the pocket, letting him see one side of the field, and hopefully he stays as aggressive as he was in the fourth quarter of that game on Sunday. I think if he played that way for an entire game, this team can win a game by 14 to 20 points. It's a matter of Are they willing to let him off the leash that early in a game like that? Because it could potentially put a lot of pressure on your defense if they do turn the ball over in those kind of situations. It's a little more aggressive. And
will they protect him enough to give him the opportunity to do that? That's part of it, too. Whether it's the line.
And I don't think they want to run him the whole game. I think that there's opportunities to run Blake Bortles all the time. I think he could run for 120, 130 yards a week. They don't want him to. I don't think that Fish and this coaching staff wants him out there getting hit that many times over the course of a game. They want him to learn how to beat teams from the pocket. And you saw them kind of last week with an opportunity to win, saw the same thing against Tennessee. When it came down to, we got an opportunity to win this game, run, Blake, run. I mean, it's whatever is available to you, take advantage of it and use your athleticism. And I think for the most part in games, they're limiting that a little bit because they want him to learn the other aspects of the game and develop them.
Final vote from Matthew Ryan on Facebook. Keep Bortles upright. Jokel, channel your inner Baselli. Denard for over 100 pass or run. Turnovers. That's a few more than three, but we'll take them. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag Houston sucks. Hashtag we believe. I'm fine with all of those hashtags in this particular instance. The fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We want to remind you, it's always better to give than to receive, so they encourage you to find a worthwhile charity to do what you can to assist those in need. Tom Bush is supporting Farm Share, so you can stop by any of their outlets to donate a non-perishable food item, and you can get more info by visiting farmshare.org. And right now, they've got all kinds of deals going on to the end of the year as well. Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush BMW, all around, Mazda, Mini, you name it. We appreciate those guys and their support as well. Thanks to Blake Bortles for stopping by and joining us earlier in the week. You'll hear more from him on the Jags pregame show coming up on Sunday. Thanks to Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor of the broadcast. For Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, hope she's having a nice time up in Charleston. For Agent Gibbs,
enjoying it for the first time as an adult.
And by the way, Rainbow wrote that Ocho Fisho tweeted me like an hour ago, and I didn't mention it, but they have all the houses painted in the bright colors. It's called Rainbow Row.
I don't know.
Other than it looks cool, I don't know if there's anything significant to it. And he said there's a great strip of bars in there somewhere too, but.
That's why you go as an adult.
What city doesn't have a great strip of bars?
You ain't kidding. Do want to remind people, too, Sunday after the Jaguars game, hopefully a victory. Back-to-back, baby! Let's see if we can get two victory weeks going here. I will be over at Colhane's Irish Pub Sunday night for team trivia. If you think you know sports, come on out and test your sports trivia knowledge with me. Bring a couple friends out there. Get started at 7:30 on Sunday night at Colhane's Irish Pub.
Give me a sample question. What do you got?
Come on. Penman and Atlantic.
Penman and Atlantic.
I try to get a Jaguars question in there virtually every week.
I'm going to miss it.
The last one I did was outside. Basically, the question is, who is the Jaguars' third leading wide receiver on their all-time receiving list?
Third leading wide receiver.
So behind Jimmy and Keenan.
It's one of the bad guys, huh?
it's not a great player, no.
Is it Matt Jones?
No.
Is it Reggie?
It's Reggie Williams.
All right, it's one of those two.
And he's actually, I think it was sixth all-time in receiving. So it was Jimmy and Keenan. Mercedes is third in the organization's history.
Pete Mitchell in there?
Mojo, Fred.
Wow.
Are both ahead.
Let's dump it down to the back.
Of Reggie Williams.
Shall we?
Yeah.
How about that? All right. Well, there you go. I told you I'd miss. I was in the ballpark. Hopefully somebody at my table could have talked me into Reggie Williams. So check Tony out at Colhane's on Sunday night as well. All right. We've got the boys of XL Primetime coming up next. Stick around. I'm sure plenty more on Jim McElwain being hired in Gainesville, Jags, Titans coming up this weekend, and everything else from the world of sports, including all those championship games in college football. Again, for all the aforementioned, I'm Mike Dempsey. This is Jaguars Today signing off. Have a great weekend. Go Jags.